Last week, Norman spoke about our need and the need to change the culture within the church. And he was very open about the personal challenge that he had found in this book of Judges, and especially in the character of Gideon. And I feel that, you know, I need to be open with you as well, and I need to kind of share with you about an aspect of culture that I would like to see change. It's something that probably not very many of you know of about or know about me, and that is that I'm a hugger. I really like hugs. I like good, warm, firm handshakes. I would love to see these simple physical acts within church culture, where we are a church of warm welcomes, of heartfelt hugs and handshakes, because we are all members of the family of God. Through the love of God, we are members of the one family, and when we meet each other, I would love us to be happy to see each other, to be shaking hands, to be giving hugs as brothers and sisters in Christ, making contact with each other, making eye contact with each other. And this actually fights against the culture of individualism and of superficiality, which we can so easily see in the church, which comes in from the world. And small cultural changes, small little things, can make big differences to how we live as a church family and how those around us see us. Changing the culture. And Gideon made changes to the culture he lived in. He destroyed the idols of the people around him. They were all worshiping these idols, these Asherah poles, and he destroyed them. He set up an altar to the Lord so the people would worship God properly. He listened to God, and he was faithful to God. Even when God took his army and cut it down to size a couple of times, he still was faithful to God, fighting faithfully with God. The story of Gideon can be split into two parts, two sections. Part one is the good side. And last week, Norman took us through that first section of Gideon and the challenge to us all through that, to live with the understanding that as God was with Gideon, so God is with us. As God called Gideon to be a mighty warrior, we are also to be mighty warriors where the Lord has placed us. We need to realize that like Gideon, we are weak, but God is strong. And God fights with and for us. And God gives the victories. And he can use any one of us. And then last week, Norman applied the passage of Gideon's victory to himself and to the church. And he challenged us with what it looks like to see culture changing in a church. He had this. I asked him if I could use these points. We know that church culture is being changed when, and some of these points are brilliant. When people are thinking about those not yet here, rather than those who are here. When the rank and file are taking cafe church invites. When more people are engaging in corporate prayer. When people don't just want to be entertained but are equipped. People want to discover their gifts and use them. People are volunteering and not having to be coerced to serve and to give. And the taught are starting to be the teachers. People in our workplaces, people around us are seeing the difference that God makes in our lives. And we are making a difference in our community and in our town. And there is more that could be added to this list, so much more about sacrificial giving, showing the fruit of the Spirit, and as we heard this morning about producing a crop 30, 60, 100 times, being a really fruitful people, seeing people coming to the Lord. And there is a core of people, again, as has been said, within church, within this church, and within churches where this is their culture. They live for this, but it needs to be the culture of the whole church. The church should make a difference in the world for Jesus. This is what church should look like. If we are not doing these things, we need to change. We need to change our culture, our mindset, the things we prioritize and do. But the truth is that changing culture is difficult. It's actually very difficult, especially in Northern Ireland. And sometimes when we do change and a change happens, you know, in a little while we just slip back into the old way of doing things. As I read a list like this, I say, yes, this is awesome. I'm going for an interview in a week's time. I might use it. You know, don't tell anybody. But I say, yes, this is it. This is the culture I want to be part of, where we're thinking like this. Then, as I read that, I then ask myself the question, will I be here at 7 o'clock tomorrow night to give out these invites to the people who live around us? Because if we're going to live like this, change has to happen within our lives. But why do these changes not stick? Why do only a few people take them up? Why isn't it everybody? Well, as we look at part two of Gideon, we will see some warnings which are relevant to us all, both individually and as a church. It's because part two of Gideon is the bad. Many years ago, the Lord really used this section to challenge me. You know, because as a boy, I grew up thinking, Gideon, wow, he was so cool. There's like 300, they beat 135,000 guys. Like, these guys, like, this was an amazing story. You know, I was taught about the importance of Gideon, about being weak and relying on God and his miraculous power to deliver. I even, in BB Bible class, I taught about Gideon, you know, and did all that stuff. And then I stopped there at the end where he won the victory. And then one day, I was reading in Judges, and I read on. And I was like, no, what's happening? I don't want to know. It's like, you know, you've got your hero, you know, who you really look up to, and then bang, something happens and they just fall. I was like, no. I was left disappointed. But there are things that we can learn from Gideon. And you may think I'm going to be a wee bit harsh on Gideon. Maybe I am, I don't know. But very quickly, we start to see the downfall of Gideon. We start to see why the changes that he had made didn't stick. And the first thing we see is the danger of pride. We see the danger of pride. The Lord gave Gideon the victory, and as they chased the Midianites, we see three really interesting little episodes. And the first was a challenge to Gideon's leadership. And that's at the start of chapter 8. Just open up at Judges chapter 8, because I'm going to refer to quite a lot of stuff here. And this is where the Ephraimites were basically saying, you know, Gideon, why did you treat us like this? Why didn't you call us out to come and fight against Midian? And this was Ephraim, remember, this was the more powerful tribe. And they were saying, Gideon, what's going on here? But then Gideon basically, he just uses flattery and says, look, you guys, you know, you guys got these two leaders. They came into your area and you got them, so you guys are cool. And he was able to flatter them, and he was able to sort of subdue their anger. And as he did this, I kind of get the impression that this probably boosted his self-confidence. His sense of self-importance was probably starting to rise here as he calmed the situation. Maybe here we see the beginning of pride. And then we have another episode where Gideon is asking for help. We see in verse 4 of chapter 8, he was chasing after 300 exhausted. They came to a town of Succoth, and they said, give us some bread. We are hungry. We're running after these kings of Midian. But the people of this town looked at them and said, well, do you have them? You know, do you have them in your possession? Have you got them? Why should we give bread to your troops? And Gideon's like, I'm going to go and get them, and I'm going to come back, and I'm going to punish you guys for this. He went to the next town, and the same thing happened. And he said, when I return in triumph, I will tear down this tower, he said in verse 9. We see these two towns of Israel, they refused to help Gideon, probably because they were scared of these two Midianite kings, Zeba and Zalmunna. They didn't think that Gideon was going to beat this 15,000 strong army that was left. But then we read in verse 12 that Zeba and Zalmunna, they were defeated. He routed their entire army. And then in verse 15, Gideon comes back to these towns and he says, here they are. And then he punished them. He says, they taught them a lesson with briars and thorns, that he pulled down the tower of one of the towns and he killed the men of that town. This was the first time in Judges where we see Israelite against Israelite. Yes, these towns had mocked him, and they should have supported him. But this revenge that he took on them, it was extreme. And importantly, we hear no mention of God here. Gideon was starting to make this about himself. As his pride and self-importance rose, he thought less about God and more about himself. Immediately after this, we see another episode where Gideon then kills these two kings, where he kills Zeba and Zalmunna. Gideon asked them about who they had killed in the fight, and they told him, and he basically says this back to them, "Those were my brothers, the son of my own mother. If you had spared their lives, I would not have killed you." That was verse 19. Here again, we see that it is all about himself. The motivation of personal revenge. You know, actually what he should have done was he should have killed these guys because they were fighting against the Lord. The thought of sparing them should never have come into his mind. But he murdered them, not for the Lord's glory, but because of a slight against him and his family. Here we see his personal desires getting in the way of the will of God. He forgot about God's will and glory. In these three episodes, we see within Gideon the rise of me, of that personal importance, all about him. Pride was an issue for Gideon, and it is one of the reasons why the changes didn't stick. It became about him and not about God. In churches, how often can this be said of us? We're in a ministry, we're working away, it's going well, and we then fall into the trap, and I have done this several times, of thinking, you know, we're doing really well. We're doing good here. It's all going well. And it's a natural reaction. We start to think that we are doing it. But it's one that we need to fight against, because it leads us to forget about what God's will is and that we are doing it for his glory, because we start to think less about God and more about ourselves. And what can happen? So if someone comes along in the church and they want to change something, or they want to do something different, it's going to affect something we've worked on for years, we don't listen. Or maybe we actually decide that we want to defend ourselves, we want to fight back, we want to take revenge for a slight against us, and change doesn't happen. Relationships are broken simply because our human pride naturally forces us to think about ourselves and not about God, his will, and his glory, and what these changes or what these new ministries could do, or the lives that could be won. And we see this in churches so often, the danger of pride. Another reason the changes didn't stick was because of the danger of making idols of his past victories. Gideon made idols of his past victories. And we see that in chapter 8, verse 27. And Gideon made an ephod of it and put it in his city, and all Israel whored after it. It became a snare to Gideon and his family. He led the people to worship this ephod, which represented their victory instead of God's. The first thing Gideon did after the victory was to set up an ephod, the very thing that God told his people never to do. He just replaced the Asherah with this ephod. And in Exodus chapter 20, "You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above, or in earth beneath, or in the waters below." He swapped one idol for another. Remember, before the battle, God said to Gideon in chapter 7, verse 2, "You have too many men for me to deliver Midian into their hands, in order that Israel may not boast against me that her own strength has saved her." The people were to see that it was the Lord who saved them. It was a miracle that he performed for them. But instead, the people were deceived into thinking that it was their own strength that had saved them. They worshipped the victory and not the God of the victory. And we see that in verse 33 of chapter 8. As soon as Gideon died, the people of Israel turned again and whored after the Baals. When Gideon died, naturally they just worshipped the other idols around them. Why? Because they'd just been doing that for the last wee while anyway. And then the cycle just started again. And again, this can be very true of the church. We are so good at looking back to the past, to our past victories, saying that it was good enough in my day. I say that, and I'm only 37. And it's such a dangerous thing to think and a thing to say. The fact is that we, as a church, as we as Christians, we need to change. The culture needs to change. The way we do church needs to change. The way we think about church, the way we think about sharing our faith, how we witness to the world. And the danger of making idols of our past victories is that it can stop us from doing new things. It can stop members of congregations buying in to new ministries and giving their all for it, supporting it prayerfully and in other ways. Ministries which God will use, we don't go for because we're making idols of past victories. And it stops good changes from sticking. Don't get me wrong. The past shouldn't be held up as an idol, but our past victories, they should inform our present and our future culture. Yes, we can learn from them. We can learn from the hearts of them. But they should inform instead of dictating. And then the final reason that changes didn't stick was because of the danger of resting on our laurels. I think Gideon rested on his laurels. Read verse 22 of chapter 8. They said to him, "Rule over us, you and your sons and your grandson, for you saved us from the hand of Midian." Gideon said to them, "I will not rule over you nor my son. The Lord will rule over you." After the battle, immediately these people are looking for Gideon to rule over them, to be their king. Whereas God was to be their king, Gideon told them that. But it would appear that maybe Gideon wasn't totally sincere in this statement. We read this in verse 30. Now Gideon had 70 sons, his own offspring, for he had many wives. It would appear that he lived like a king of that day. It would appear that he had a harem, that there was plenty of ladies for him. And even read on in verse 31, it says, his concubine, who was in Shechem, also bore him a son, and he called him Abimelech. What does Abimelech mean? It means my dad's a king. You know? It looks like he took all the trappings and the glory and the wonder of kingship without the responsibility. I think it could be said that he rested on his laurels. And because he rested on his laurels, he didn't drive on with God's vision. After this great victory that he had, Gideon was ideally placed to drive on with God's vision and his calling for his people to be his people in that land, to seek and to follow him, to destroy the idols in the land, to be a faithful people for God, with God, fighting their battles, living with God, glorifying him because of his love and the miraculous deliverances he had won for them. They were in a perfect place to drive on. But I think he sat back and rested on his laurels. People in the church, I think this can be quite similar to people in the church, and I've done this, where you say, you know, I used to do this, and we did really good things, but, you know, currently they're not serving. They're not driving on. They have lost the big picture, and they are resting on their laurels. One of the things I said recently, and I was really, I feel bad about it now, I said that I'm too old for BB. Because I haven't been involved too much in BB since coming here. I used to be really involved in BB, and you know, as I look at that list, I used to think, oh wow, I did really good in BB. I did some amazing things, you know, and I made an idol of past victories. And when I moved church, I kind of rested in the laurels of that, and I didn't get involved in BB. I've been in BB a couple of nights after meetings recently, and I just really realized that I was a tube. You know, I really miss it. I miss getting involved with BB, the boys, building relationships and showing them about God's love. I feel, again, I've missed out a little bit on that. But sometimes we rest on our laurels and the good things that we've done, and we don't drive on. We need to drive on, see the big picture. And I've been thinking about this changing of our culture. I truly believe that one of the reasons that we are slow to change, or maybe never change, is because we don't see the big picture. And it causes us to rest in our laurels. Gideon just saw his own happy wee life. Not the big picture of what it meant to be the people of God. As we said, seeking and following God, being blessed by God, being a blessing to the nations. If he did see that, things would have been a lot different. Changing culture is good. But if we only think about changing the culture in our churches, I don't think it's enough. We need to focus on the bigger goal of changing the culture in the world we live as we bring the good news of Jesus as witnesses to him. And it means that our culture, that our church culture, will have to change, to be relevant, to reach out. And we will not be able to. We will not have time, if we are doing this, to rest on our laurels. Because we will be busy driving on with God's vision for the world, making disciples of all nations, seeking victory after victory after victory, being thirsty and greedy for more victories, keeping working, keeping going. If we look at the time of the judges, I believe we see similarities between the church and the people of Israel. As with Gideon, the people looked to Gideon and worshiped their victory over the Midianites instead of looking to God and worshiping him for their miraculous rescuing. This was why they never fulfilled their potential. Yes, they had some great moments, but gradually we see the spiral of spiritual decay in the people. Why? They didn't see the big picture. They didn't give God his place, acknowledge God as the king of their lives, and worship God, living for him and for all that he had achieved for them. So, if we want to change our culture and to ensure that these changes stick, we need to be aware of the danger of pride. We need to be aware of the danger of making idols of our past victories, and we need to be really aware of the danger of resting on our laurels and drive forward. Let us ensure that we are looking to God, his glory, his will. Let us become greedy for victories and drive on, seeking to save the lost for God's glory through his power and because of his love, grace and mercy shown to us through Jesus Christ. Let us make the changes that need to be made, and let's make sure that they stick.